It's Wednesday, May 22nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. Welcome, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up, coalescing divergent opinions about Syria. What would really happen if Britain left the European Union? We have a hashtag VOA investigation.
It's a signal to anyone, including Russia, that NATO is prepared to defend its members. That's very, very important. That's the heart of deterrence.
European security and NATO expansion. Also ahead, Selena Gomez tours again. It's all on today's International Edition.
And as for meeting with the authors, he has expressed...
UN Syria envoy Staffan de Mistura said Tuesday he hopes intra-Syrian talks can resume sometime next month. In a video link from Geneva, he told the UN General Assembly the window of opportunity is coming quickly to close unless we maintain alive the cessation of hostilities, we increase humanitarian aid, we come to some common understanding about political transition. The veteran UN envoy has held two rounds of proximity talks in Geneva with delegations from the Syrian government and moderate opposition. The last session broke down at the end of April as the then two-month-old cessation of hostilities began to unravel. De Mistura does not think the truce has entirely collapsed, saying it continues to hold in some parts of Syria. But he warns there could be a total breakdown if it's strained further. While the Islamic State launched counterattacks forcing government forces back while trying to halt the advance of U.S.-backed Kurdish and Arab militia in northern Syria, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says he's prepared to meet with dozens of State Department officials who are challenging U.S.-Syria policy. In a dissent channel memo issued last week, the 51 diplomats called for airstrikes against the forces of President Bashar al-Assad to force him to stop persistent violations of a cessation of hostilities. Kerry says he's read it and described it as very good. His spokesman John Kirby said Kerry thought it was a well-written argument.
And as for meeting with the authors, he has expressed an interest in meeting with at least some of them. I mean, there's a lot of them, so I don't know that we'll be able to pull off a single meeting with each and every one of them there, but he has expressed an interest in talking to them, and we'll do that in due course. The policy planning staff will be preparing a response, as is required. As for any espousal of the ideas, before, during, or after the fact of them being proffered in a dissent channel message, the secretary very much keeps private his advice and counsel to the president on policy matters. Obviously, we're going to respect that. He has made no bones about the fact that he is not content with the status quo in Syria. Too many people are dying. Too many people are being denied basic life-sustaining material, food, water, medicine, and there's been too little progress on the political track.
Kirby said Kerry's comments about the memo should not be considered a full-throated endorsement of the views in the dissent channel message. The New York Times, which obtained a copy of the dissent memo, said while it is not unusual, the number of officials who signed onto it is large, if not unprecedented. Most are mid-level officials. Some are career diplomats involved in shaping Syria policy for 5 years. Regional analyst Stephen Zunes of the University of San Francisco tells VOA's Victor Beatty, it's a good thing that U.S. officials are allowed for moral or strategic reasons to voice their opposition to stated policy.
People in the State Department, just as there are in many other circles, are deeply divided about what to do about Syria. People acknowledge that this is an enormous humanitarian crisis, but there are serious questions as to what would help, and even if it did help, at what risk of broader repercussions. Clearly, there are those in the State Department who feel very strongly that, out of both the moral imperative and long-term U.S. interest, that more direct military intervention, support for regime change, if you will, or at least a minimum amount of intervention to relieve the suffering population. But there's also the debate of whether this could work. Ironically, I think the bigger objections were raised from the Pentagon. And though historically it's been the people in the State Department that have cautioned about military intervention and the people in the Department of Defense who've been more eager to promote it, in this case it might be the other way around. That unlike Libya, we're talking about a government with a fully intact military, one with far more sophisticated anti-aircraft and other equipment, and it could indeed, you know, create a situation that could badly escalate the conflict, especially given the close Russian cooperation with the Assad regime.
Mr. Kerry says he's going to meet with this group. Surprising?
I think it shows a sign of respect that he takes their concern seriously. Indeed, I don't think there's anybody who has been following the situation in Syria closely, and certainly Secretary of State Kerry is one of those who isn't, frankly, torn about what should we do. And he has come down quite firmly, as has the president, you know, that additional military intervention by the United States would do more harm than good. Clearly, it's a judgment call, and he's willing to listen to those who believe it should go the other way.
Do you think this will change policy at all?
The president of the United States is commander-in-chief, and it's clearly his call. He knows it, they know it, and this would be true of any president. At the same time, Barack Obama, you know, more than almost any recent president, really trusts the judgment of people he believes are knowledgeable and fair-minded and not ideologically driven. So I think he will at least listen to them and consider them more than many recent presidents may have done. But it doesn't mean they will necessarily be able to convince him.
At the White House Monday, President Obama's spokesman Josh Earnest called the dissent procedure valuable and worthwhile, but he defended the president's Syria policy as having prevented the mistakes of previous administrations, citing the 2003 Iraq invasion. Earnest said U.S. policy is focused on defeating the Islamic State and not the Assad regime. Well, a policy for Britain for many years has been to be a part of the European Union. However, voters are now going to have the opportunity to decide whether Britain should stay as a part of the European Union or leave. And it's time now for a social media segment with G. Abby Lee. Hi, G.
Hi, Jim.
Well, ahead of this referendum that's coming up this week, what are the British celebrities saying about online the so-called Brexit?
So we're seeing a wide range of reactions on Twitter, but let's begin with a neutral one. British actress and activist Emma Watson has a huge following online, by which I mean more than 22 million followers. Her handle is at E.M. Watson, and she tweeted a selfie with her hand out in front with a big X in her palm. She captioned it, "Don't forget to vote on Thursday. No excuses. Hashtag EU ref." Now, the EU referendum hashtag generates an image of a ballot being put into a box, and within 13 hours, more than 34,000 people liked that tweet.
What about some of the opinionated tweets?
Jim, we talked about writer J.K. Rowling a couple of days ago in regards to the Orlando shooting victims, but Rowling also shared her thoughts on Brexit as well. Her handle is at JK_Rowling, and she tweeted this. "If one more person tells me voting Remain is for the rich, who will suffer if the experts are right and 100,000 jobs go and welfare is slashed?" So we can safely assume she is in the Remain camp. Now, former Spice Girls member Victoria Beckham is on her side. Remember her? She's a posh Spice, and she simply tweeted, hashtag Remain.
Well, those are pretty big names. What about on the other side of the controversy?
Actress Elizabeth Hurley wants out. Her handle is simply her first and last name, and she shared an image that says, out and into the world. She captioned it, beautiful graphics, beautiful sentiment. Hashtag vote leave, hashtag Brexit. Another UK actress, Joan Collins, also tweeted Brexit and used emojis of the British flag, a thumbs-up sign, and a heart. Jim?
Well, we give you a thumbs-up, G, for that excellent wrap-up. You may tweet your questions and comments to our Twitter stream at VOA_IE. Tag G and myself on those tweets while you're at it. Our handles at VOA Stevenson and at G Abby Lee. Among the top stories currently trending in Asia, Taliban kidnapped 27 passengers in southern Afghanistan, free 21. Japan, South Korea on alert for North Korea missile launch. Anti-American protests in Japan reflect opposition to Abe's ruling party. Tensions and frustrations grow in China's rebel village of Wuhan. Bangladesh tanneries find order to move. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on the voanews.com website and also on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, Britain is on the brink of a vote. Thursday is the referendum on whether or not to exit the European Union. Polls show the contest is too close to call between supporters of Brexit and those who want to remain in the 28-nation bloc. Whatever decision British voters make could affect life far beyond Britain's borders. Our latest hashtag VOA TV show looks at the global impact of the British referendum, and its host, Michael Lippin, is right here with me in the studio. Michael?
Hi, Jim.
Hi. What angles did you discuss?
Hi, Jim. Well, you know, this week we're looking at the consequences of both a Brexit and a Remain vote on Britain's EU neighbors, as well as on its special ally, the United States. And we discussed those issues with a panel including our colleague and financial markets reporter, Jill Malandrino, who was in New York, as well as with French economist Nicolas Veron. He is a visiting fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Now, Veron was with me in the studio, and I asked him what he sees as the main risks to Britain and the EU of a British vote to leave the bloc.
For the United Kingdom, for Britain, it's clearly an economic risk because there will probably be a fallout in terms of a number of industries which benefit from the membership of the UK in the EU. And none probably is more important than the financial services industries. The City of London is a big financial hub of the European Union, and probably some of that activity would have to shift to the European Union, to what remains of the European Union, if the UK was to leave the single market.
Why do you think it would have to shift to the EU?
It's basically a consequence of the legal framework of the single market that gives a so-called passport to the big financial players, you know, the big asset managers, the big investment banks, the Goldman Sachs or PIMCO, lots of US firms actually are in London, and that gives them an access to the EU single market. They would lose that most probably if the UK was to leave the EU.
So it's a passport to the rest of the European Union.
Exactly.
Well, how about the impact of a Brexit vote on, you know, the US relationship with Britain and Europe? What do you think that would be?
I think the U.S. has always found, since the U.K. has become a member in the 1970s, the U.S. has always found it useful to use its special relationship with Britain to influence EU matters. So the U.K. is a bit the man of the U.S. in the EU, if you will, the one with
like
which,
a representative of the U.S.
In a way. I mean, it's closer. There's a language, there's a proximity, there's a history, and therefore the U.S. finds it easy to communicate with the U.K. and to send messages or have channels of communication with the European Union through the United Kingdom. That's not exclusive. Of course, the U.S. has a relationship with Germany, France, Italy, all
with
those
other
countries.
EU countries.
But the U.K. is very convenient in that matter. So the U.S. will continue to engage with the EU. It will continue to engage with the UK, but if we lose a bit of that synergy.
Yeah, and over to Jill in New York, what are you hearing from people on Wall Street about the potential impact of a Brexit?
Well, when we talk to analysts and traders, we're going to have that obvious reaction after we get the vote counted on Friday morning. It's just like when we get an interest rate decision from the Federal Reserve here. You get that initial reaction in the foreign exchange markets. You'll get it in the S&P 500 and some of the commodity markets as well. So the reaction that we're going to look for is what the pound does initially. And if we look at trading in the pound today, it's up. So that implies that the Remain vote will be leading at this point. We're going to look at what the pound does initially, how the yen, how the dollar trades in tandem with that. And then the conversation turns to, well, let's say the yen moves higher. What's the Bank of Japan going to do next to keep their currency under control? So it's a big wheel that starts spinning in the foreign exchange markets. The equity markets will, of course, have the initial reaction as well. Anytime you get a sell the news or buy the news event, you're going to fade some of that action there. And of course, commodity markets like crude and gold will be impacted because gold in particular is viewed as a safe haven asset. So there will be volatility there. If you're the average retail investor, I wouldn't try to trade around this action. Let the quantitative algorithmic trading machines play ping pong for the first couple of days and then see where the currency and stock markets consolidate over the next week or two.
That was our markets reporter, Jill Malandrino. We also had two guests on the show via Skype from Britain to talk about the big role played by social media in this referendum campaign, including the role played by cats, who have been making appearances in viral Twitter posts. So if you want to find out why that is, you can watch the full show at voanews.com/#VOA or on my Facebook profile, which is Michael.Lippin. Jim, back to you.
All right, you got my attention on that one. I'm going to check out the show. Thank you so much, Michael, for stopping by. Recent events in Eastern Europe and rising tensions with Russia have revived the debate over NATO enlargement, which Moscow considers a provocation. The question comes as NATO leaders prepare to hold a summit early next month in Warsaw, Poland. VOA's Yanni Bojajewski has more.
With Montenegro having begun the accession process to join NATO, the question over the alliance's future enlargement is once again looming large for countries in the Balkans and elsewhere. For Macedonia, at NATO's doorstep, becoming a NATO member is the only alternative, says the country's defense minister.
The more NATO is in Southeastern Europe, in the Balkans, the more prosperous and stable the Balkans is.
Beyond the enlargement issue, the deployment of NATO forces in the Baltic countries, Poland and Romania, will be the main focus at the upcoming Warsaw Summit. Such a deployment is significant, says former U.S. Ambassador to NATO Kurt Volker.
It's a signal to anyone, including Russia, that NATO is prepared to defend its members. That's very, very important. That's the heart of deterrence, is showing that willingness to take those steps. That's critical, and I'm very pleased to see that. Even with reducing defense budgets and reducing U.S. commitment overall, this step is very important.
But NATO's move to station forces on its eastern flank and its membership enlargement are considered threats by Russian leader Vladimir Putin.
His goal is to get NATO to back down. He wants to divide Europe, divide NATO, force NATO to back down, not protect the member states of NATO that are adjacent to Russia. It's very important that NATO not accept that.
Russia has responded to NATO's focus on its eastern flank with a pledge to deploy three divisions, numbering some 30,000 troops, to its western and southern flanks by the end of the year. Yanni Bojajewski, VOA News, Washington.
And there's more to this story at voanews.com, even video for you to see. Follow us on Twitter while you're online at VOA_IE and like us on Facebook at VOA Now. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Selena Gomez is back on tour for her fans to see her perform in person, and she has a new album out, too. VOA Border Crossing host Larry London has all the details, and he shares them with us, along with International Edition's Susan Yockey.
Selena Gomez, who is very, very popular, very beautiful, was just signed to be the new celebrity face of Louis Vuitton, and has been the face or the hair of Pantene Shampoo. And now she's out on tour for her latest album called Revival. And Selena got her start when she was just a little toddler on a very popular TV show, one of your favorites, called Barney and Friends.
Yes, I do like Barney. He's the big purple dinosaur
that dances
around.
She was one of the little kids who was on one of the early casts, and she since has grown up and became a Disney star on a show called Wizards of Waverly Place. And then she was in a number of different films, Camp Rock, Spring Breakers. She's done quite a few films. And these days, she's known for her pop music. And also, she's known as the ex-girlfriend of Justin Bieber. There's been a lot of talk about, are they together? Aren't they together? They break up. Then they post photos of each other on their Instagram accounts. So everybody's kind of left wondering. They keep us guessing, wanting more. I guess it's part of the game. But right now, she's got a new song out from her Revival album. And I like the song. Kill 'Em With Kindness is the name of the new song.
We'll just tune in.
The world can be a nasty place. You know it, I know it, yeah.
We don't have to fall from grace. Put down the weapons you fight with and kill them with kindness. Kill them with kindness. Kill them.
Well, tell me more about the album. What else is on there?
Well, you know, she's had Same Old Love and Hands to Myself. These have been big hits from that album so far. She was with a band known as The Scene. This is her first project without her band, The Scene. But she's great. I mean, they love her. The young people love her. She has a great relationship with her fans. She recently got bangs, changed her hairstyle. She added golden highlights to her hair. And there was a while that she was being criticized for her weight, which was never really a problem. And she's one of these people saying, this is me. I love me. You should love me. She did disappear about a year ago for a while. She was supposed to go out on tour. And then we heard she was in rehab. But the facts came out later. She was diagnosed with lupus.
Oh, my.
And she was undergoing chemotherapy treatment for lupus. Unfortunately, there is no cure for that disease. But she's now become a spokesperson for the disease, for the Lupus Foundation. And she's donating proceeds from her ticket sales for her tour to the Lupus Foundation. So she's very much speaking out about lupus and its effect on people.
And but, she's in remission, I take
it. She's in remission. It was a very tough time for her, but she's okay now. And she's looking great, sounding great. And people are showing up to see her perform on the Revival Tour, which has been on break for the last couple of weeks. But she's ready to begin the next leg. And it's a world tour, so she's traveling around the world.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Larry, for stopping by.
And thank you, Susan, for having me on your segment, and it's been a pleasure working with you. Happy retirement to you.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I don't know if our listeners know, but yes, thank you very much. It's been fun working with you, Larry.
Nice working with you, too.
We'll have more on Susan Yockey later, and thanks to Susan for all of her great dedication here. You've been listening to International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Zena Bobdell-Rockman. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with us, and have a great day ahead.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
At the invitation of the Cambodian government, the United States and Cambodian militaries conducted humanitarian assistance events and military-to-military subject matter expert changes in Kampot Province, Cambodia this month as part of Pacific Angel 2016. During this mission, approximately 80 U.S. Cambodian servicemen and women, along with personnel from Australia, Vietnam, and Thailand, worked together in partnership with local NGOs to provide humanitarian assistance to the residents of Kampot Province. Pacific Angel is a joint and combined humanitarian assistance mission conducted in various countries throughout the Indo-Asia-Pacific region with the active participation and leadership of the U.S. Air Force. Pacific Angel includes general health, dental, optometry, pediatrics, physical therapy, and engineering programs, as well as various humanitarian aid and disaster relief subject matter expert exchanges. The mission enhances participating nations' humanitarian assistance and disaster relief capabilities while providing needed services to people throughout the region. In Cambodia, engineers worked on reconstruction projects for four local schools and two health centers in the city of Kampot, and medical service providers conducted health service outreach in the Twik Chu and Kampong Trak districts in Kampot province. The subject matter expert exchanges between the two militaries focused on public health emergencies and humanitarian aid and disaster response. Since 2007, Pacific Angel missions have improved the lives of tens of thousands of people across the region, while ensuring that the region's militaries are prepared to work together to address humanitarian crises. This was the fourth Pacific Angel mission conducted in Cambodia. The United States is proud to work with its partner, Cambodia, to help improve the lives of people in Cambodia and throughout the region.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.